Scripture today comes from the book of Matthew, chapter 17, verses 1 through 9. 6 days later, Jesus took with him Peter and James and his brother John and led them up a high mountain by themselves. And he was transfigured before them, and his face shone like the sun, and his clothes became dazzling white. Suddenly there appeared to them Moses and Elijah talking with him. Then Peter said to Jesus, "Lord, is it good for us to be here? If you wish, I will make three dwellings here, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." While he was still speaking, suddenly a bright cloud overshadowed them, and from the cloud a voice said, "This is my son, the beloved. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him." When the disciples heard this, they fell to the ground and were overcome by fear. But Jesus came and touched them, saying, "Get up and do not be afraid." And when they looked up, they saw no one except Jesus himself alone. As they were coming down the mountain, Jesus ordered them, "Tell no one about the vision until after the Son of Man has been raised from the dead."
I want to thank everyone for once again making me feel like I'm home and allowing us to have a Mardi Gras Sunday. Homesick. There was one joy that I didn't hear mentioned. Karen Bowman, wasn't there a hockey game, a Gopher hockey game last night? Who did they play? We are Penn State, right? Who won, Karen? Oh, the Gophers won. Okay. Sorry, we picked on Dean at the 40 and 50-something the other night because he was doing the Penn State cheer, which is, "We are Penn State." And I was like, "That's it? Just, we are Penn State?" So we did the whole Minnesota Gopher one for him, huh? Follow me to be safe. The other night at our worship team meeting, we were discussing our fun worship for today. Ann made a comment about how good it was that I explained Mardi Gras in my sermon last year. So I thought, okay, I'll explain it again for those who may not have been in worship last year for this day of beads, doubloons, which is money, and king cake. I grew up in South Mississippi, as you know, and we would drive 1.5 hours to New Orleans and go to Mardi Gras parades in New Orleans, hence the real Mardi Gras beads. All of the Gulf Coast region celebrates Mardi Gras, though. My hometown of Hattiesburg has its own Mardi Gras crew called the Crew of Zeus. Now, crew is spelled K-R-E-W-E. It's an organization or group of people who put on a parade or a ball during Mardi Gras. That's all they do. They are always very spirited affairs. The parades are so much fun. They used to just happen on Fat Tuesday, but now they begin right after Epiphany, like at the stroke of midnight, it seems like. They last until Fat Tuesday or Mardi Gras. As I shared with you last year, after a parade, you return to someone's house and you eat jambalaya and red beans and rice and crawfish etouffee and have king cake. Yes, king cake. Inside of every king cake is a plastic baby, and whoever gets the plastic baby has to buy the king cake for the next year. It didn't work here. These are flown in from New Orleans, but I did that. Or at least that is how the tradition used to go. With parades lasting for weeks, whoever gets the baby now has to buy the king cake for the next night. So just know, whoever gets the piece of king cake that has the baby at the end of worship today truly has to buy the ones for next year. This year, we have three opportunities because we have three cakes. So three different people could have the pleasure of buying the king cakes. The weeks of celebration leading up to the big parade on Fat Tuesday are filled with joy and laughter and fun and silliness and extravagance and living life to the fullest. Mardi Gras, or a form of it, has been around for centuries. Its ancestors could possibly be an ancient tribal ritual of fertility that welcomed the arrival of spring. Ha ha ha. There was such a celebration that was held in mid-February in Rome, and the early church realized it was going to be impossible to get their new converts to stop carrying out their pagan customs. So as Christianity has done from day one, we incorporated a custom, a pagan custom, and declared it a Christian custom. Thus, Mardi Gras, or Carnival, was created as a period of merriment that leads to that season of Lent when we are penitent. So, On Fat Tuesday, we're supposed to eat all of the good stuff we supposedly give up for Lent. Every bit of fatty food is eaten so that we can live a life of sacrifice and piety during Lent. That's why it's called Fat Tuesday, which is what Mardi Gras means. So for all of the frivolity and craziness of Mardi Gras season, since the days of the early church, it is considered a Christian celebration. So I'm not leading you too astray. So there you have a brief explanation of Mardi Gras, some information you heard last year. I threw in a few new pieces of information just to mix it up a little bit. And that is where the sermon stops being like the one last year. The text for this Sunday is always the Transfiguration, the moment when Jesus is on the mountain and the disciples see Jesus talking with Elijah and Moses. I shared at our worship team meeting that I wasn't sure what I was going to preach from today, but I knew for certain it was not going to be the Transfiguration. Years and years and years of preaching a text that is so difficult to understand, I decided I was going to skip it this year and preach something that was more like Mardi Gras, something fun, celebratory, something that includes the joy that we experience at parades, tables loaded with good food, and wonderful parties. As we were leaving the worship team meeting, I voiced again that I was not preaching from Matthew 17 this Sunday. At that moment, Gary Hesser, who I don't see sitting here, and this is all his fault. At that moment, Gary Hesser, in a way that only Gary Hesser can do, and those of you that know him know what I'm about to say, he began to talk about the Transfiguration and the complexity of the text, and in that tone of voice, right? And the different levels of understanding going on in the text. I looked at him, I said, yes, Gary, that is all there, but I am so tired of this text, I am not preaching from it. I went home knowing by noon the next day I had to have a sermon text entitled to Deb. I still didn't have a clue what either would be, but I knew that with all my years of preaching, I would be able to find something that I thought would be a perfect sermon for today. After I went to sleep, I kept waking up during the night thinking about what Gary said. The next morning, as I worked on what text to use for the sermon, I kept hearing Gary's voice in my head. I finally caved in, sent Deb the text we heard read, and the title. Deb can attest to the fact that when I walked into the church after lunch that day, I looked at her and the first words out of my mouth were, "Darn that Gary Hesser." I so didn't want to preach the Transfiguration. After years of preaching this text, there isn't anything new to be said. Or is there? Last year we heard the story from the Gospel of Luke. The story is great in Luke. Remember, the disciples want to stay. Peter's ready to build the dwelling so they never have to leave the mountaintop. They wind up not saying a word about what they have seen on the mountaintop. And then they all get in trouble at the bottom of the mountain when they return. There was a man who asked the disciples to cure his child, but they were not able to cure the child. Jesus appears to be upset and tells the disciples, "You faithless and perverse generation, how much longer must I be with you and bear with you?" Now, we understand these interactions of the disciples not getting it. We're right there with them. Who among us would be able to explain what happened on that mountaintop? Not saying a word makes sense to me. Luke's version seems very real. And then there is Matthew. Matthew's Transfiguration story is the one that I have avoided for years and years and years. It has the same tone as Luke. Peter's overwhelmed by the glory and says to Jesus, "Lord, it is good for us to be here. If you wish, I will make three dwellings, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." Then a cloud comes and a voice that says, "This is my son, the beloved. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him." Now, this is very similar to what happens in the telling of the Transfiguration in Luke, so all is good up to this point. It is what happens next in Matthew that has been the part that I have tried to avoid for years. Matthew tells us that when the disciples heard this, they fell to the ground and they were overcome by fear, but Jesus came and touched them, saying, "Get up and do not be afraid." As they came down the mountain, Jesus ordered them to not tell anyone about the vision until after the Son of Man has been raised from the dead. In Luke, the disciples hear the voice and decide they're never going to tell anyone what they experienced on the mountaintop. They were terrified with the cloud and the voice. But outside of that, did you hear the difference in Matthew and Luke? It's subtle. It's so subtle that it stands out to me like a sore thumb. The disciples are terrified in both Matthew and Luke. I believe we would have been too. But in Matthew, Jesus touches the disciples, tells them to get up, and to not be afraid. Do you see why I've managed all these years to avoid this text in Matthew? If we take seriously that Jesus touched the disciples while they were terrified and told them not to be afraid and to get up and basically get going, then what does that mean for us in those moments that we experience the fullness of the glory of God? Granted, the story is about Jesus and yet another epiphany, another revelation that Jesus is God's Son. So much so that Jesus is standing on a mountaintop having a lovely conversation with Moses and Elijah, who are both supposedly dead, I believe. I, for one, cannot explain this. I cannot begin to fathom what they're talking about. How's the weather at the bottom of the mountain? Great! How's the weather wherever it is that you and Elijah are hanging out? Luke tells us that they're talking about Jesus' departure, that he was going to accomplish in Jerusalem his departure. So were Jesus, Moses, and Elijah chatting about a crucifixion? Matthew does earn points with me at this point of the text, though, as there's not even a hint of what Moses, Elijah, and Jesus may have been talking about. But have we really stopped to consider everything in this text? Have we really thought about Moses and Elijah appearing years and years and years after their death? Is this a form of resurrection? Of course, Elijah was taken up into heaven by a whirlwind. But we know in the Hebrew scriptures that Moses died, Moses was buried. I cannot begin to try to explain this to you or anyone else. Is it a moment full of the glory of God? Yes, it is. Is it a moment full of the glory of God filling Moses, Elijah, and Jesus? I believe the answer is yes. Is it a moment for us to be terrified? Yeah, it probably is. Not because something bad is going to happen to us, but because it would be really hard to deny the presence of God and the human and divine nature of Jesus after going to the mountaintop. And as human as they possibly can be, Peter, James, and John fall to the ground overcome by fear. Oh, to stay in that spot of fear, to stay where we are unable to say a word, to stay where we don't understand so we don't have to deal with a text or what we believe to be the Christ right in front of us. Oh, to stay and surround ourselves with the fact that we are human, so we just can't understand, so we don't have to do anything about it, and we have nothing to proclaim. In Luke, we can do that. God loved the writer of the Gospel of Luke. The writer of the Gospel of Matthew does not let us off so easy. For in the midst of our falling to the ground at the realization of the glory and presence of God, in the midst of our being overcome with fear at the voice that proclaims that Jesus is the one, Jesus comes, touches us, tells us to get up and do not be afraid. Jesus reminds us that he's human. There's a touch, a physical touch. And then he calls us to live life, to go and do, to be his disciples and put fear behind us. Sometimes we experience things in life that cause us to be frozen in time. It is almost as if we have experience where we have built dwellings and that is where we're going to stay. If those places are Mardi Gras, then let the good times roll. If they are places of sadness and grief, then we have built dwellings out of tears and anguish. The disciples are being told to get on with life. If we've built the dwelling on Bourbon Street, remember that life isn't all fun and games. And if we built our dwelling in the cemetery, remember that life is to be lived. No matter where we are, Jesus is there calling us to get up and get going. I really wish I could explain this text with all of its levels of complexity. I do know that I have avoided this story in Matthew for so long because we don't have an out of being too afraid to go and live the life Jesus calls us to live. Sure, the disciples still don't get it when they get to the bottom of the mountain, which makes the text even more real for us. So it's good for us to be here, right here today. We have king cake to eat. Enjoy every bite of it. It's a table of celebration for us to share, right next to the table where Jesus again reminds his disciples not to be afraid through the touch of the bread and the cup. As our Cajun friends love to say, laissez-les bon temps rouler, let the good times roll for a couple of more days, for soon we will begin that journey to the cross with Jesus, the one who was transfigured and disciples were transformed, the one with whom God is well pleased. May it also be true with us. Amen. As we come to this time in our worship,